Welcome to Stop the Noise, a podcast that inspires business owners and experts to make a bigger impact in their niche by rising above the noise and differentiating themselves. Hosted by Susan Tatum and Mindy Rosser of The Conversion Company, Stop the Noise features business owners who have made the jump to uniqueness and stepped into the full potential of their business. And now, here are your hosts, Susan Tatum and Mindy Rosser.
Welcome back. I'm Susan Tatum, and I'm here today with Jonathan Rosen from Collaborex. He is the founder. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hi, Susan. So nice to be here. Thank you for having me. This is great.
Awesome. You have a really interesting company. It's a unique networking group, and I think that's something that could be really valuable for our listeners to know about. Mm-hmm. So why don't you start off, just tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got where you are, and what we need to know about Collaborex.
Okay. So this is a business that I started about 4 years ago. And, you know, whenever people start things, it's always as a result of previous experiences that they've had that they're trying to improve upon. So I've had those. You know, a background in business. I'm an attorney. That's the boring part. Haven't practiced law in a very long time, which I'm very happy about. But I started this because I was involved in some peer advisory organizations about 6 or 7 years ago, and their model really resonated with me, but I saw some flaws in the model. In addition, in my past, I've been involved in many types of business networking groups and also saw many flaws in their model. So people weren't getting the value that they really needed to get in both those situations. So what I did is I created a company that what we do is we facilitate what we call peer advisory business development groups. So really they are, say, 70% peer advisory or mastermind type groups and 30% business networking groups. The problem with both of those types of organizations is you want to get the best advice from your peer advisory groups and you want to get the highest quality referrals from your business networking group. But no one really does because all those groups are composed of just random groups of people. They're often random groups of non-competing professionals, but they're random groups of people. And the people within those groups, there's no reason to think that those particular people will give you the best advice or those particular people will give you the best, the highest quality referrals. So there was an issue. So people would go and join a group and say, well, let me try it out and I hope it works and they seem like nice people and I like hanging out with these people. But the reason they join, they sometimes are not getting their expectations and results there's a large gap between them. So what we did to differentiate ourselves and to solve that problem is all of our groups are segmented by primary target markets. So to give you an example, so we have 12 groups in the New York metro area. So I have one group in New York City, a particular group, and it's only for people that call on venture capital funded companies. So that means everyone in that group, they're non-competing professionals. That's who their primary target market is. They're calling on really startups that have gotten some significant funding.
Yeah.
So you can imagine who that is good for, who those startups that have significant funding are spending money on particular things. They're hiring people, they need the advice from attorneys, from insurance people, from payroll people, from organizational development people, from human resources people, from strategy consultants, all those kinds of things that will help them grow.
Right.
So everyone in that group shares that target market. So what does that mean? It means when they get advice from those people understand them. They understand their challenges and they understand the market that they're going after. So the advice that they're getting from those people and the advice that we give is mostly on business development, meaning what do we discuss? We discuss how do you grow your client base within this target market that we all share. Everyone does things differently, so people can compare challenges and success stories and give invaluable advice to each other on how to do it best, their best practices. So that's the peer advisory part.
Okay.
The networking part is all those people, their primary target market are venture capital funded companies. So that means they have clients that are venture capital funded companies. As people build relationships with each other, they can actually introduce each other's clients. So the you can't get a higher quality referral than that.
Right.
It takes a long time to build trust, so people do that. But after they leave one of our meetings, they're all doing the same thing. They're all business, their business development activities are very similar in that they're looking for more venture capital funded companies or decision makers at those companies to meet and to offer their services. So everyone actually knows the decision makers everyone's looking to meet. And that is 100% the point of networking. Don't go into a random group of people and hope they know the people you're looking to meet. Go into a group that's non-random where they already, you're certain they already do know the people you're looking to meet. It
makes
the process much more efficient. It's kind of, the concept is like marketing 101. If you're trying to get your message out to a target market, get it out to that target market. Don't blast it to the world. So
I almost want you to repeat that, but I'm going to pull it out as a quote. Because if every marketer paid attention to what you just said, that one sentence is invaluable.
Well, you know, if you go on, if you're searching for something on Google and you're looking for, say, golf clubs, don't type in sporting equipment. You'll get other stuff. Focus on what you're looking for. Be focused. So if you're looking for the best peer advice on how to build your client base within a target market, don't talk to people that know nothing about your target market. It's just basic kind of common sense. So,
well, so I find, since I've been doing this podcast and also just in my business, talking with business owners and trying to get them to focus, I find that there is a great deal of fear that if they narrow down who they want to do business with, they're going to miss some random opportunity or other opportunities. Does that occur also in the networking area?
All the time. Drives me up a wall. It really does. Because we want people to express how other people in the group can help them. One of the characteristics of our group, it's kind of like someone once said to me, we've got your back group. I said, so what that means is a requirement of membership in our group is they have to sign an agreement that says that they're committed to being responsible for each other's success. So if everyone in the group is responsible for each other and they've committed to that, then everyone's going to succeed. So if I believe that if you collaborate with the right people, you're going to achieve amazing individual results. It's, you know, I'm in the New York metro area. It's highly competitive. You can't walk 10 feet down the street without running into, 10 financial planners.
Oh, that's shocking.
So it's so competitive that it's good for them to have a support group of other people that are out for their success. But getting back to your question of people being fearful of defining a market niche, I get it all the time. And people, I'll say, well, who is your target market? And they'll say, basically, they say anyone that's breathing. And but if people can become the best at one thing and be known for one thing and only be, say, the go-to financial planner for millennials of a certain age that have just had a baby that are lefties and play tennis, then those people that are fit that description will go to that person because they're the best person for them.
They're relevant. Yeah. They can relate to each other.
Yes.
Seems obvious to me too, but like you, I find it can be quite a challenge. The document that you have them sign, or the pledge that you have them sign, is that common amongst other kinds of peer groups and networking groups, or is that something that you added to the mix?
So I had lunch with someone yesterday who's in a traditional business networking group. And when you join that other networking group, she says that you have to sign a pledge. You have to raise your right hand and agree to certain things. And one of the things is, she said, you have to agree to abide by the standards, by the ethical standards of your profession. And she thinks, there are a lot of professions that are not, their standards are not that high.
You wonder if they even have them.
Think they could go beyond that. So it's people, I don't think it is that common, but we kind of try and take it to the next step by expressing this mission of, my business is very simple. It's really put the right people in the room and help each other. Yeah. And every decision that we make is based on that. It's not based on revenues or numbers of memberships. It's based on our mission of putting the right people in the room, getting them to commit to each other's success, getting them to help each other with whatever peer advisory issues are important to them. What that does is, by building those relationships, that's what leads to high quality referrals. So people go from, they join a group and they think, oh, everyone here is able to refer me.
Yeah.
They're not, doesn't mean they're going to refer you. They're able to. They know the people I'm looking to meet. And by building relationships with each other and operating the group as a peer advisory group, they actually, you see the group turn over a couple of months, where they go from being able to they can't help but refer each other. I want it to become involuntary, actually.
You said over a period of a couple of months. Is that meeting, how often do your groups meet?
We only meet once a month for 90 minutes. And it takes a couple of months for people to really get to know each other. But every agenda item, every moment that's spent in that 90 minutes is with the goal of accelerating the relationship building process. So whether it's doing so in, everything's a group discussion. We don't go around the room and let's hear your pitch, which I'm not a fan of. I think when you do that, it's good for practicing your pitch and not much else.
Yeah.
But everything, so we start our groups, often the groups we start by immediately, we walk in, we say hello, and we say, okay, we're splitting everyone up into groups of two. We make everyone pick someone that they know the least, that they haven't met or they haven't gotten together with. And we interview each other for 5 minutes each. And then what they have to do is, then we go around the room and the person, you have to tell about the person you interviewed for 2 minutes. First, you have to tell about them personally. And then you have to tell them what they wanted you to tell the group about them. And then we go to the boring stuff, the professional, you know, oh, he's an accountant, or she's an insurance broker, or things like that.
Okay.
All relationship building.
So when these people go to join your group, this is off topic a little bit, but do you have some sort of vetting system that you have that, have you ever talked to anybody that wanted to be in a group and you just felt they were wrong?
At least 50% of the people.
Really?
Yes. There was someone in one of my groups that said to me, one thing I love about this group is Jonathan rejects 50%. And I thought that I would have to have a particular vetting system and have a lot of hard conversations with people when I started this company. I rarely, rarely ever have to do that. When people come to a group, they get a sense of whether it's good for them, whether these people are going to be good for them, whether they're their people, whether they share values, whether these are people that they could be friends with, that they're going to bond with. So we tend to get, given the nature of our business and that it's called Collaborex, we tend to get people that collaborate and that are what I'd call other focused. They care about other people before themselves. You know, they're the people that open the doors for people and don't cut you off on the highway and things like that. So it's a personality type that tends to like our groups, and people that aren't like that, I don't even have to have a conversation. They just don't show up again. You know, they come as a guest and then they're not interested in membership. I don't ask them and they don't ask me. It's very easy. So
that does make it where you don't have to have the conversation.
But I did think that I would have to have those conversations, and it rarely happens. And when I do have the conversations, it's an easy conversation because I say, I just don't think this is the right group for you. Let me suggest some other groups.
Yeah.
There's a ton of traditional networking groups out there that are just very transactional.
Oh, where you just go with a bunch of business cards and
you go with a bunch of business cards, you say your pitch, and all they do is they count how many referrals did you get and how many did you give? And what it does is it encourages high quantity, low quality referrals.
Which is not what you're there for.
Which is a waste of time. It's just not really good. You know, the way that I look at this and how I really want to differentiate the company is I view my groups kind of as a sanctuary, especially maybe it's because I used to live in Manhattan, where it's very, now I live in the suburbs, but it's a very crazy competitive world. And if you have a supportive community that has your back, it makes all the difference in the world. You know, networking doesn't have to be torture or small talk or micromanaged or, as I said, high quality. Facilitators should be like guides, not drill sergeants. So everyone should, the experience of the group should be wonderful. They should walk out energized and kind of inspired from each other and feel supported. And that's what really differentiates us from the other groups.
So you actually look forward to the next meeting. You know, you're not going to get beat up.
So I have 12 groups. People say to me all the time, "Hey, Jonathan, do you go to all the groups?" And I look at them and I say, "Go to all the groups? That's the fun part. Why do you think I created this company? So I can go to all the groups." That is the fun part.
So you said you are a lawyer, but you haven't practiced in a long time. Did you go directly from practicing law to having this group of networking groups?
Oh, no.
It was curved path.
You're right. I practiced law for a couple of years, and then I owned a bunch of businesses, something completely different, having nothing to do with this. But I run and bought and owned businesses a lot in the commercial furniture industry, which were crazy businesses with lots of moving parts, and everything that could go wrong would go wrong. And when I left that business, I thought to myself, I never want to be in a business again that has long lead times or freight damage. And this doesn't, so I'm happy about that. But I ran a couple of businesses, and then I did also a couple of corporate turnarounds for a few different companies, kind of in the lower middle market range. And as I was saying, about 6 years ago, I was involved in a purely peer advisory organization called Vistage.
As a member or as a
chair, as a facilitator. Okay. And I ended up here because when I was doing it, my mother-in-law at the time was 93, and she would say to me, "So, Jonathan, what are you doing now?" Kind of with a little judgmental tone in her voice. She's saying, "What are you doing now? And don't you think you should lose a few pounds?" You know, things like that. She had filters weren't her thing. She didn't have a lot of filters. And I told her what I was doing, and she would look at me and go, "So what's your plan B? Like, do something else. That's dumb." So I owe the pivot to of my business from that purely peer advisory organization to what I'm doing now to Evelyn. So,
but you stuck with the idea of a networking group. You just saw an opportunity. I guess explaining back to you what I am hearing you say, you saw an opportunity to make a better group.
Yes, it was. Before it was purely peer advisory, and I saw the flaws in that model. In that, why are those people? One of the experiences that I had in trying to build a new peer advisory group is that when you build a new group, you have zero members. And so you'd approach people and you'd say, let me tell you about the group. Let me tell you what we do and the features and benefits and what we can do and how valuable it is. And they would say to me, it's a peer advisory group. I go, yeah. They go, well, so the value of the group depends on the other people in the room. How do I know what advice I'm going to get? And they would say, I would go, yes. And they would say, so who's in your group? And I would say, no one.
You.
It's new. You and other people like you. And they would all say, call me back in 6 months when you have a group. So the value of a peer advisory group depends on the other people in the room. So from that, I said, well, how can I make the peer advice that people get of the highest quality? And way to do it is to be in a room with people who understand you and understand your marketplace and understand your challenges. But everyone does things differently. As I said, people have different backgrounds and education and experience and all kinds of ways. So the groups of mine, of all my groups that are most successful, especially in terms of peer advice, are the ones that are the most diverse, that people have the most different experiences. So you have the person that went to an Ivy League school sitting next to the person that went to community college. And what happens all the time, and it's like gold, when someone discusses something and someone else says, gee, I never would have thought of it that way, then you think, this was valuable.
So you're getting those different points of view.
Yes. Yeah, if you have everyone that's the same, then you're going to get similar points of view usually.
Well, you know, listening to you, Jonathan, it occurs to me that one thing that I hope that our listeners will get out of this is that you can differentiate yourself by having the right relationships.
Yes. One thing that I've said to people, and it's so important for people, for individuals in my groups, and for me as a business to differentiate, I need to differentiate myself from competition, and individuals in my groups need to differentiate themselves from their competition. But yeah. One of the easiest ways for people, for especially individual professional service providers, financial planners and people that everyone else perceives as selling a commodity product, something similar, the best way they can differentiate really is just to be themselves. To not be afraid of being themselves. And being themselves is, telling a funny joke or being, just be comfortable with yourself, and because you're different than everyone else. So
yeah.
People will gravitate towards you if you're honest and authentic about who you are. And you can express that, express what matters to you and why you're doing what you do and why you care about it so much. And people that believe that will say, oh, I believe in that too, so I'll do business with that person.
So your groups are also giving people confidence to, or helping give them confidence to just be themselves?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so
people,
go ahead.
Yeah, when we go around and people in the groups, and when I say, tell us about yourself or something like that, and people say what they do, no one really cares. No one really cares what you do. They care about you as a person, and then they'll care what you do. You have to start with that. You start with what you have in common, what values you share.
Do you find that people have more difficulty talking about that, at their personal aspects, or their business aspects?
Sometimes it's hard to get out of them to loosen up and say, just get over yourself, be yourself. You know, When if you go around the room, a room, and someone's, and you come to, say, the accountant, and you say, so tell us about yourself. And they say, oh, I do financial statements and tax returns. I've yet to hear anyone say, that is so cool.
Fascinating.
But if the accountant says, tell us about yourself, well, let me start with, I have two teenagers, and they're driving me up a wall, and I don't know what to do. You get everyone nodding their head, like either I was one of those teenagers, or I have teenagers, or I've been through it, or that's what I have to look forward to. So people then relate to that, and then they want to continue the conversation with that person. And then they'll ask about his accounting work. But it creates trust. That's what creates trust, in that, oh, seems like that guy or that woman, they seem regular. They seem normal. They're relatable.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then I think that having that relationship with somebody that can refer you to their own clients helps with that trust factor too. It just establishes some credibility at the front door.
Right. No one gets referred to their own clients till you really build a lot of trust.
Yeah.
That's a risk. So.
True.
But people will refer to other people, you know, to other either good referral sources or to other potential clients that aren't theirs.
So what kind of tips or advice would you have for people that are listening to this if they're trying to take that step to step away from the herd and focus either their businesses or themselves on something specific or be different from the rest of the crowd?
I think everyone should step back and say, what kind of person am I? What are the things that I really care about the most? How does what I care about the most relate to what I'm doing? How does what I'm doing, how is it a reflection of what I care about the most? And then if you can express that. So I find that when people say things that are true and authentic, when they say, let's take financial planners, for example, when they say, the reason I went into this is because growing up, we were not financially well off. And I felt that if there had been some additional planning along the way, that it would have really alleviated a lot of problems that we had. And it was something personal to me, or they saw a relative that had issues or someone, it becomes an emotional reason. And people should not be afraid of expressing that. Instead of just saying, hi, I'm a financial planner and we have $3 billion under management. That does nothing for anyone. Like, so what?
There's no connection. Yeah.
It doesn't develop any sense of trust. And people make decisions, buying decisions especially, based on gut feelings and emotional decisions. You know,
and then justify it with logic.
Yes. So it's all about trust. Once I heard someone use an example. Someone has a baby, right? They live in a neighborhood in the suburbs. They're looking for the first time, they're going to go out and they're looking for a babysitter. And what do they do? Let's say they have two choices. One block away, there's a 16-year-old girl. They've known that girl's parents for years. They only lived a block away. She has zero experience being a babysitter, but she wants to babysit. So this is their most precious thing in the world, their baby. And then three blocks away, there's a new person they've never met that moved to the neighborhood who is 35 years old and said they have 15 years experience, you know, being a babysitter, and they know CPR and they were this and this. They always pick the teenager because that's who they trust. They know their parents. They know their values. It's not a stranger.
Yep.
So that's a kind of a good example. You know, trust builds relationships, which builds business.
I think that's a great example. And it's, although I could keep talking about this, it's a good thing to end it on.
Okay.
So the listeners that want to get in touch with you or learn more about what you do, what's the best way to do that?
So they could look us up on our website, which is collaborex.com, and it's spelled collaberex.com, or anyone can email me at jonathan@collaberex.com. It's spelled J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N at collaberex.com. And that's the best way. And you can see what we do, and I would be happy to have conversations with anyone and continue this conversation. This was fun.
Thank you, Jonathan. It was great to talk to you again.
This is great. Thank you so much.
Have a good evening.
You too. Have a good evening. Thank you
Bye-bye.
So much, everybody.
Thank you for listening to another episode here on Stop the Noise with Susan Tatum and Mindy Rosser. We hope you found inspiration and value in today's show. For additional resources and to learn more about our offerings, visit theconversioncompany.com. Join us again next time here on Stop the Noise.